How many of you were aware that Canada, our very polite neighbors to the north, have for the past half century been engaged in a war? Yes, Canada for 44 years has been at war with Denmark. Now, this war centered on a border dispute over a chunk of land known as Hans Island, H-A-N-S, Hans. Hans Island is an uninhabitable rock. It is small. It's only 1/2 square mile in size. It's about 300 acres. It sits in the dead center of the Nares Strait. Now, the Nares Strait is a 22-mile-wide body of water that separates the very top of Canada from the very top of Greenland. And Greenland is one of three countries that form the Kingdom of Denmark. In 1973, Canada and Denmark signed an agreement through the United Nations to establish the border between Canada and Greenland. The previous border had been based on old and unreliable maps, and it needed to be updated. The new boundary ran right down the center of the Nares Strait, and therefore right through the middle of Hans Island. Both nations claimed the island as their own, and because the Nares Strait is only 22 miles wide, the island falls within the 12-mile international border of both countries. And for a long time, the two nations simply chose to ignore the issue. However, hostilities over the island erupted in 1984. And it was that year that Canadian soldiers landed on Hans Island and planted a Canadian flag. And if that wasn't enough, at the base of this flag, they also left a bottle of Canadian whiskey. Now, word of this encroachment got out, and no one less than the Danish Minister of Greenland Affairs flew by helicopter to the island. He planted a Danish flag and replaced the Canadian whiskey with a bottle of Danish schnapps. And he also left a note saying, in Danish, of course, "Welcome to the Danish island." And so began what became known as the Whiskey War, with each country planting their flag and exchanging bottles of liquor. Now, the matter of Hans Island, it's of a serious official nature. Border disputes between countries always are. But the diplomats on both sides kept everything in perspective, and they displayed a tremendous sense of humor. And as wars go, you can't do better than swapping bottles of booze back and forth. After all, no lives were lost, no blood was spilt, but there were shots. We'll get back to the whiskey war in a moment, but keep it in mind. Our scripture reading for today continues our journey through the book of Genesis. And today we're looking again at Jacob. Jacob is now a fugitive, running for his life away from his brother Esau, who has vowed to kill him because Jacob stole Esau's inheritance. Last week, we looked at the story of the birth of these twin boys, Esau and Jacob, and then the story of how a famished Esau gave up his inheritance for a bowl of Jacob's stew. It was really good stew. And then there's another story that tells us how Jacob duped their father Isaac into granting the inheritance to Jacob and making it official. You recall that Jacob dressed up like his brother. Jacob's mother, Rebecca, insists that Jacob leave town as the only course of action. And so she sends him back to Haran, which is her home, and the land of his grandfather Abraham. And she expects that her son will only be gone a short while his brother cools off. But in the end, Jacob is away for 20 years, and his mother dies before he returns. And in our reading for today, Jacob has fled from his home, and he set out alone, all by himself, no family, no servants, just himself. And he set out for the land of Haran. And when it becomes nightfall, the sun goes down, he stops to sleep. And the location wasn't chosen for any particular reason other than that's where he was when it got dark. And as a sign of his grim situation, Jacob has no pillow to sleep on. And so he selects a rock as his pillow. And he goes to sleep, and as he sleeps, he has a dream. A wild and sensational dream of a ladder connecting earth to heaven. It's really, although the word is ladder in our Bibles, it's probably not a ladder that we would think of today, but probably a set of stairs in the side of a great structure like a pyramid or a ziggurat. It's a stairway to heaven. But on the stairs, he observes angels ascending and descending between earth and heaven, conducting the work of heaven. And in this dream, God appears next to Jacob and proposes a covenant with him, a covenant not unlike the one that God made with Abraham, Jacob's grandfather. God says, "I am the Lord, the God of Abraham and Isaac. I will give you this land and your offspring. Your offspring shall be numerous. I am with you and will keep you wherever you go. I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I promised you." That's the covenant. And it must have been soothing words to Jacob, who was on the run, to hear that he was not alone. And so when he wakes up from his dream, he declares, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it." And then he proclaims, "How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven." And then the next morning, Jacob takes that stone that he's been sleeping on and he sets it up as a pillar, a shrine, and he anoints it with oil. And he says, "The name of this place shall be Bethel," or Bethel, which means house of God. And Jacob recognizes that, yes, this is a holy place. Now, growing up, Jacob was a child of privilege. Not only was his family wealthy, but they were also religious aristocracy. His grandparents were the great Abraham and Sarah, the first couple called by God. His father is Isaac, promised by God and a miracle himself. He was born when Abraham and Sarah were well past their childbearing years. And as a young man, there's no indication that Jacob had any relationship with God. We are told nothing of this. Now, I imagine that Jacob considered himself religious because his family was religious. And I'm sure that he worshiped God at the altar along with his family as he had been taught. And he offered the prayers and the sacrifices that were required. But then, after doing what he's done to his brother and his family, he's forced to run for his life. And as he sleeps, he dreams that dream, and his eyes are opened to a world that had been hidden from him, a world filled with divine activity, with angels moving between heaven and earth, moving across the world, doing God's bidding, a world in which God is alive and active and present, a world that he had never seen before. And in this world, God is building relationships with people. But Jacob, he's still Jacob. And he assumes that this God must be a schemer like him. And he assumes that God plays by the same rules that he plays by. And he assumes that there are strings attached. And despite what God promises, Jacob still, he's still got to negotiate his own terms. And so he says, if God goes with me and watches over me, then the Lord shall be my God. This is the deal that Jacob proposes. In God's infinite patience, God does not object to this and goes along with Jacob's addendum to this covenant. Now, when we read this story, our VBS brains kick in, and so we like to focus on the otherworldly vision of those stairs with the angels going up and down between heaven and earth. It primes our theological imaginations. But to be honest, it's not the most significant thing that's going on here, because that would be the covenant that God reaffirms with angel, with Jacob. The covenant first uttered to Abraham and Sarah, but this time it's a little different because it specifically includes Jacob. And Jacob is the less than perfect. Jacob is the schemer. Jacob is the swindler. Jacob is the liar. And yet God includes Jacob in this covenant. And I imagine that Jacob grew up hearing about that covenant that God made with his grandparents, but probably felt left out, because after all, God had never spoken to him before. And he didn't lead the sort of life that anybody, that God would be concerned with. But all that changes here in our reading when Jacob is on the run. He's alone. He's isolated from everybody he knows. And he's sleeping with his head on a rock. And he has this dream, a vision in which Yahweh speaks to him and makes a covenant with him. And so he wakes up and declares this place to be holy, and he blesses it by building a shrine and naming it Bethel. And for centuries after that, Bethel would be one of Israel's holiest sites. But what makes this site so holy is not just that Jacob encountered God here. What makes the place worthy of this title, Gate of Heaven, is that that is where Jacob encountered God. Despite our individual or corporate wrongs, despite how badly we have led our own lives, despite how we may have pushed God away, what we learn here is that God will be with us. God is with us even when we may be on the run and cut off from everybody we know. God is willing to come and remind us that God has plans for us as well. And so the question that we need to ask ourselves is this: what dreams, what signs, what encounters have we had that should be labeled Gate of Heaven or House of God? What place or experience in our lives points to God's intentions for us, for our church, for our community? What moments have opened our eyes to the mysteries of God's kingdom and then empowered us to follow in God's way? The good news that we find here in this story is that this moment between Jacob and God has a profound impact on Jacob. He would continue on to Haran, and he would be gone for 20 years, but he would return home a changed man, walking in the way of the Lord. And he will humbly offer himself to his brother, asking forgiveness. We will see all of this over the next couple of weeks. So, let's go back to Hans Island. When we left it, Canada and Denmark were engaged in the decades-long whiskey war. However, things have changed. Just a year ago, in June 2022, these two nations came to an agreement, and they established a border that runs pretty much through the center of the island. In the words of the Canadian Foreign Affairs Minister, "We're setting a precedent. We're showing to other countries how territorial disputes can be solved. It is possible to settle a disagreement, and it's always the best way to do it through principles and norms that both parties recognize." Must be pointed out that at the signing ceremony, the two ministers exchanged bottles of liquor in a nod to the tradition of the whiskey war. However, both nations made it clear that this was more than just an agreement over little, tiny, insignificant Hans Island. Because with the war being waged in Ukraine, another border dispute, their accomplishment spoke to a greater audience. The Danish minister explained it this way. He said, "This signing sends a message to the world, including President Putin, that when there are things you're disputing over, you have to make the resolution based on international law, not the law of force, but by the force of law." And this is truly remarkable. And for this, I would like to nominate Hans Island as a shrine to peace, as another gate to heaven. For it is here that our eyes are open to a new reality, a reality based on a commitment to wage peace and not war. When you look at a photograph of Hans Island, you will see that it's mostly circular in shape. It has no sharp edges, no craggy peaks, because it's been ground down over time by the water and the ice and the wind. So now that it's mostly smooth and round, it looks kind of like a great stone pillow floating in the water. It looks like the rock that Jacob may have used to sleep on. Hans Island, it's not a religious issue, it's a diplomatic one. But as people of faith, we can certainly look at it with new eyes, and recall Jacob's declaration, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it." May Hans Island be another revelation that changes our world. Amen.